Okay, our next speaker is Terry Griffin from the University of Arkansas. He's going to do a meta-analytic synthesis of insecticide termination decision rules.
Well, thank you. Am I supposed to wear a mic, too?
You can if you want.
I thought that's why they were recording.
Yeah.
We're good. Okay. I am Terry Griffin, and looking across here, I did a short presentation last year here on meta-analysis, kind of introduced it to the group. A few of you were familiar with it. Presented some of these results at a meta-analysis for economic research conference in October, and then again at the Cotton Incorporated Precision Ag and Cotton Researchers Meeting in Austin in November. I do have some results this year, and I'm excited to show these. Looking around the room, how many of you know what meta-analysis is? How many of you know the true meaning of meta-analysis? That's always a fun joke with meta-analysts, because there's meta is used for a lot of different terms. I would define it, though, for those of you who are not familiar with meta-analysis, and literally it means analysis of analyses. So what I've done is a synthesis of all the research finding on a certain topic and put these into a data set. So my data set is the estimated coefficients from each of the primary studies. It's not necessarily theory, but it is a set of statistical tools for synthesizing data. And it's geared towards finding a quantitative review of the literature and see if there is a underlying truth that we can gather from the information. In 1976, Eugene Glass was given credit for coining the term meta-analysis, although it's been used in science since the early 1900s by Pearson, Fisher, Cochrane, and the other statisticians that we all are familiar with. Since you're all mostly economists, I won't read this to you. But we'll point out the three bold terms: statistical, large collection, and rigorous alternative. This, a lot of people will use a derogatory term towards meta-analysis, saying it's a literature review. I mean, it is, but it's more than that. But it is statistical, large collection. When I say large, I mean an exhaustive collection of all the studies, and rigorous because like any other form of statistics, there's a lot of testing involved, and once we get through that part, we still do the estimation procedures. The steps in the meta-analysis is a selected topic that would seem fairly simple, but it's not as simple as we believe. My topic today is insecticide termination decision rules in cotton, the insecticide portion of Cotton Bowman. Construct a representative sample of studies. I spent about 6 months browsing libraries and proceedings papers and Google Scholar and trying to find all the studies pertinent. And then I printed them off. I have a stack of them about that tall. And then I went through them with a fine-tooth comb trying to figure out if there's anything in this study that I can add to my database. And, you can imagine not all researchers report things in the same way. So there were some things I had to convert numbers that were given to something that I could use. And not just transformations from scientific units to English units, but we're talking about I had to do some estimations to even get their numbers to fit into my database. I performed some statistical analysis, descriptive stuff, test, and then a meta regression, which would be random effects estimators. Then we interpret the results, report them, and make recommendations, maybe even point out where there was holes in the primary data that a primary scientist should reevaluate. I think all of you are familiar with the way things are done in Cotton, so I'm not going to explain small plot research to you. So once the scientist, entomologist, agronomist, and so forth conducted their experiments and reported those, I was interested in looking at notebook white flower 5, how many heat units passed that, and this is the equation for cotton growing degree days. I was interested in the treatment means that they reported, So there are maybe four or five treatments. They usually report the treatment mean in an LSD. I collected that information as well as the number of replications they used, what sort of experimental design, when, where, any other type of variable I could add to my database as moderator variables. Estimates of precision is really important in meta-analysis. So if someone says that the answer is 350 here or 370 here, well, how precise was that estimate made? And as economists, we're used to looking at the standard error of the estimate. That's kind of what I was looking for. But unfortunately, we don't get that type of parameter in the studies that I was pulling from, but we do have LSD. So I took an LSD and backwards calculated the mean squared error. You know, if I knew the number of reps and so forth, you can, I'd say easily do that, but you can do that within Excel. So I calculated the mean squared error and actually used the root mean squared error for my precision estimate. So now I have their estimate as well as a level of precision with which that estimate was calculated. So the map on the left is sort of an experiment that our entomologist friends may have put into the field. There's, let's say, four timings, timing A, B, C, and D. And on the graph on the right, I'll show you what that may look like. I have this functional form here is a linear plateau functional form. And although we probably expect a quadratic plateau functional form, we're going to use a linear plateau, and I'll explain why that's the case. These four timings may occur at, let's say, zero, nodes above white flower five, maybe, and then two or three others. And the idea is that they have a treatment hopefully past that plateau kink so that we can estimate when that kink occurs. Because for my initial estimate, I would like to know when they think that kink occurs, which is the agronomic optimal location to terminate insecticide applications. So again, this is the kink, and I'm trying to determine when they think how many heat units after nodes above white flower five that this is going to occur. So for instance, this one study, hypothetically, I threw some red dots here. That might be the treatment means for study one. Study two may have something that looks like this. It doesn't really fit that function of form, but we had several that were fairly flat. I did have 53 primary experiments that fit the criteria that went into my database. So my database had 53 observations, if you will, meta observations. 53 groups of red, 50, in blue, not, you know, those aren't 10, those are two observations on that graph. So we had to convert these to a common effect size. What was the effect? Well, for each primary study, I determined which treatment had the maximum yield, and then I took the difference from each of the other treatments from that to determine the yield difference. So the one with the highest yield had yield difference of zero, and there's a positive number for how the yield was decreased for the other treatments. I did an initial regression on the yield difference on number of heat units after nodes above white flower five. And what I'm looking for here is where the x-intercept occurs, or otherwise the kink in the quadratic in the linear plateau functional form, which would be considered the agronomic optimal place to terminate insecticide application. Well, this is going to be the metric I'm going to use in my meta regression. We plotted these. This is called a funnel plot. This is a tool used by meta analysts. On the x-axis, you have growing degree days after nodes above white flower five at the x-intercept, and on the y-axis is the reciprocal, the root mean squared error, which is our level of precision. We expect a funnel shape, a pyramid, triangular shape pointing up. The highest, the most precise estimates are higher up on the graph. Let me see if I get the mouse to work. This is the most precise estimate in the data. This is the second most precise. If you can see that there is sort of a triangular shape, that's kind of the theoretical shape we're looking for. And to make sure that this is the right shape, we perform the Eggers test. The p-value is 0.3, so we rejected the idea that there was asymmetric data. So the idea here is that we do have symmetric data. There's not data missing. And if data was missing, we would have to do some fancy work to handle that issue. But since it's not there, we don't have to worry about it. This is another plot we use in meta-analysis. This is called a forest plot. And since I had 53 primary experiments, I know you can't read this, but if you kind of eyeball this, let me get the mouse again. This x-axis is x-intercept again, and the y-axis is each of the primary studies. Now, the dot here is their estimate, or my estimate from their data for the x-intercept. And the wings, that's the level of precision. This is based on root mean squared error. The wider the wings, the less precise the estimate is. And eyeballing here, you see this sort of bimodal. You've got some estimates right through here that are very precise, and some estimates here that are very precise. And this kind of gives you a visual representation of the data to see if there was any outliers or if you made any mistakes in entering data. So I took these x-intercepts and subjected them to a meta-regression analysis, a weighted least squares regression, and is weighted by root mean squared error, the precision of that estimate. And I used the three variables I had available to me that was available from all the primary studies, when, where, and who, what state it was conducted in, what year it was conducted in, and the discipline of the lead author. I agree that's sort of a weak moderator variable, but in the absence of a better one, it was available, so I chose to use it. These are the results from the weighted least squares meta regression analysis for the three lead authors, agronomist, economist, and entomologist. And I had data from Arkansas, Louisiana, Mississippi, and Texas that was sufficient for this analysis. Some states had some data, but they didn't have enough observations to be included, so they kind of fell out of the analysis. For instance, overall, I determined that our field scientists had, from their data, 370 heat units after nodes of wildflower 5 was their overall time when it doesn't make any agronomic benefit to apply an additional insecticide application in the state of Arkansas. Louisiana had fewer observations. Mississippi, then Texas had their estimates down here as well. We hear 350 a lot, but again, these numbers here are not economic. These are agronomic optimal. So therefore, this is where the meta-analysis portion of the study stopped, and I started doing a pooled analysis that we're all kind of familiar with. I converted all the treatment means to yield potential, and the way I did that was I divided by the yield by the maximum yield for that study to get yield potential for each treatment mean, and I regressed yield potential by heat units on heat units. And I was looking for convergent functional forms because I know that after a certain point it doesn't make any sense to apply insecticides, which was in that first example was 370 heat units for Arkansas. So I forced it to converge to 100% yield potential at 370 heat units. And so this is what the functional form looks like in all the raw data. And it does converge at 370 heat units to 100%. So from an economic standpoint, I'm interested in the shape of this curve before 370 heat units. And we can use this to evaluate the profit maximization position. When we look at the price ratio between cotton and insecticide application costs. Which would be the price ratio between application cost and cotton price. This was done on yield potential, not on pounds per acre, so keep that in mind. These are the numbers that we had estimated, and when we equate those, put them into a graph. This is the frontier. Anything to the right of this line would be not in the feasible range. The way you interpret this, on the x-axis is, again, the growing degree days after those both white flower 5. The y-axis is the price ratio. It's the cost of your insecticide application by the gross revenue per acre for cotton. And when the ratio is 0.035, that's when we would stop at noseable white flower 5 plus 0. And as the insecticide got cheaper or the price of cotton got higher, we would profit maximization would occur after noseable white flower 5 plus 0 all the way up to 370 heat units, which was, again, where it converged for our example. Future work, I think I've got all the pertinent studies. I do want to keep on looking for old studies and include new studies as they occur. I didn't include all the studies out there because sometimes studies were not reported in yield per acre, but maybe grams per bow, and they didn't have a good way of converting grams per bow to per acre yields. I think I found a way around that, so I can go back and include those studies. I did not evaluate irrigation or defoliation decision rules, but if given the opportunity, I'd like to spend some time working on those two portions of the Cotman's Bowman system. And that concludes my presentation, and be happy to hear any comments, or I'd be willing to take criticisms at this point.
Any questions? Quiet bunch.
Yes, sir.
Back on the graph, we had your scatter plot, you had one outlier way to back up.
Yes.
Y-axis.
Uh-huh. That one.
Did you just throw away outliers?
No.
It makes sense.
But you're right, this does have some sort of symmetry, and this is sort of non-symmetric. This funnel graph tells me if there's missing data. But if there's a group that's up here in left field, that we need to reevaluate if I entered it right. I went back and to see if it was correctly inputted. I went to check the article out. I left it in because there was no mistakes made. Now, when we do the meta-regression, we will condition it by when, where, who, and all of these other sorts of things. So maybe for that particular year location, I may have been correct. So we condition that in the meta-regression. If there was, three or four observations out here conducted by one author who may have simulated data, I may have removed those once I identified that. But now this one, we decided it needed to be here. But we did evaluate it. We did take a look at it. Mm-hmm. And we said 370 was the number that the Arkansas studies had pointed to, and that was pretty much the most precise ones are right through the middle of that triangle. And this is a way of synthesizing data across scientists, across studies, locations, years. And how many of you have conducted a meta-analysis in your time? I know you have.
So in classifying the studies, are some of these like peer-reviewed, some of these not?
That's
that might be another way to...
That's a very good question. Were any of these peer-reviewed? Zero. They were all belt-wide conference publications here. There's a few that were defoliation. A few of you here in the audience have some studies that were in Journal of Cotton Science for defoliation. But these are insecticide termination. They were all belt-wide conference proceedings. Maybe a few of these were experiment station bulletins, but zero were peer-reviewed. I did code for that, and if there were any that were peer-reviewed, I would place a binary variable on that and account for that. There was things I tried to account for experimental design, but hey, everybody uses a randomized complete block. They were all the same, so I couldn't code for that. I coded for it, but I just couldn't account for it in the data. There's also something similar. Peer review is also, it's called a quality index. So if when you're reading these things, some meta-analysts think this is stupid, but you can give it a quality index from 0 to 10. It's sort of subjective, but what I did, some of our agronomist friends didn't report LSD, which just begins to tick me off if they're going to have these. They said it was, you know, these were statistically significantly different at 0.05, but, you know, p-values are really kind of meaningless at this point. I couldn't reverse calculate that to anything. So what I did was they said that, you know how folks put letters on treatment saying A is not any different, but A is different from B, but not from A/B. I went in there and calculated the differences between those letters and made a conservative estimate based upon those differences, included that as the LSD. And those folks got a didn't get a 1 for a quality study. You know, not to say that there weren't quality scientists, but after a while, you know, being an economist, we're really good about documenting what the numerical answers are supposed to be. And so there is a peer-reviewed process we can code for that, as well as a quality index. Yes?
I'm rolling over to your graph that had looked to me like it was kind of a threshold sort of
thing.
That's what?
Oh, yeah. Not this one?
Ooh.
Yeah.
I just want to make sure I was right. On the price ratio, if I was at, say, 100 degrees, just eyeballing 100 degree days,
yeah,
right there, if I had an application, the total cost would be $20 an acre.
Right. (20)/(0.25). I can't do the math in my head.
So it's going to have to be.
This is 1,100 bushel. I mean, this is 1,100 pounds. I'd assumed. You questioning my math?
He's just trying to recreate.
Yeah, this is a very preliminary study. If you see any errors, please let me know, because it was right. Well, the price ratio again, and keep in mind this is a cost of the application by the gross revenue per acre. You know, since this is a percent yield penalty, I couldn't say. Based on the price per pound or something like that, I had to do it on a per acre basis for it to make any sense.
Okay, well, thank you.
Thank you.